Hi, and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher. And today I'm joined by special guest, Rachel Davis. Hi, Rachel.
Hey there, Louise. Great to be here with you.
Now, Rachel, a very brief introduction for those who don't know Rachel. She is in California. She is a psychiatrist or psychologist?
Psychologist,
and she's has specialized in helping creatives with their creativity, amongst many other things. She's also a skilled abstract painter, a very talented representational painter, and we'll talk a lot more about her art as we get into this. But the reason that I invited her to be my guest this week is we had a quick short conversation on Instagram, because we're both going through periods of change in different ways. And Rachel, I'll let her tell you what her big change is. It led us to talking about change, choice, and some of the challenges around choice for women in particular, although I'm sure there are men for whom who have the same challenges. We can only speak as women. And so I said, let's just have a chat about it. We have no script, we have no notes, we're just going to have a chat. So tell us, Rachel, first of all, a bit of background. What is the big change that's coming up for you?
The very big change that's coming up for me is that after 35 years as a licensed psychologist in private practice, I am finishing that part of my professional life at the end of this calendar year. So I've got less than 3 months left of doing something that has been part of my primary identity until, I guess it's been, when did we do CVP, Louise?
The Nicholas 2018.
So that's when I started calling myself an artist. So I've had like two tracks since then, but I've decided that it's time to do this full time, the artist piece full time. And I'm in the process of saying goodbye to my clients, something that's for the first time, the decision is me driven rather than them driven. You know, as a psychologist, it's very much not about me first.
Yeah.
So it feels really different, and I'm super excited about the next chapter, and it's hard. I'll miss the people I work with, and it's very excited about what's to come artistically and a lot of unknowns. So all of that.
Do you know, and maybe this is part of what we're going to talk about, but do you know what this life as a full-time artist is going to look like?
Well, you know, I've been practicing 2 days a week for the last couple of years. I have a good picture of it, but I feel like it's going to be more of that. And that is, I've got a home studio, and I also have a studio in the ICB building in Sausalito, which is this incredible artist collective of 100+ artists. And it's a remarkable community that I love being a part of. So I'm looking forward to being there more. Mm-hmm. Because we get to sort of riff off of each other's work and support each other. And it sort of ups everybody's game to do it together. So I'm looking forward to doing more of that. I have a few places I want to take my art, but I tend to get, this is interesting, because we're going to talk about how we can talk about things in a way that's supportive instead of undermining. And I tend to think of myself as all over the place artistically, you know, because I do this and I do that and I do the other thing. And the other day somebody came to visit at the ICB and she said, we're just multi-passionate, is the way that she reframed that. And I just love that. So I'm not sure which of my passions I'm going to delve into more. I have a couple of ideas, but I'm not sure which one's going to take precedence.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I have been painting abstractly and with a landscape focus for, well, since 2015, probably, and more seriously in more recent years. And then I started being interested in portraits and have this instant thought of, oh no, this is like all over the place now. Right. What are you even doing? Who are you? You can't do this. Right. And it's a voice that I've had to fight because I wasn't feeling inspired on the other stuff. So it was mm-hmm. either do nothing or do something else. And I didn't want to do nothing. So I wanted mm-hmm. to try something else. But I wonder, is that a male-female thing? I don't know. I can't imagine Picasso sitting around worrying about, I'm doing sculptures and I'm doing drawings and I'm doing paintings and my style's changed again. And will anybody like me anymore? I can't
deep to that. Or Diebenkorn, same. You know, he went all over the place and we called him trailblazing. You know,
yeah.
We called Picasso trailblazing. I do think it has a, I don't think it's just men calling women that. I think we do the same for ourselves. We're probably the first people to do it to ourselves.
Yes.
But I think it's different. I saw something, I have to see if I can pull it up. It was great. So there's a woman named Judy Murray on Instagram. I think she's a tennis coach, but she posts.
Judy Murray. She's Andy Murray's mother.
She must be. Okay. She's amazing.
Yeah.
The things
she is.
She just posted, do your daughters a favor and raise them to be okay with people not liking them.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that powerful?
Yeah. That is because my whole childhood was shaped by trying to make myself someone that people would like and rub along with.
And it's not that that's such a terrible wish for them to have for you. You know, I'm sure it served you well in certain ways. I completely related to your solo episode where you were talking about needing, you know, I was too bossy, too intense, too sensitive, all those things, same. I'm extroverted, not introverted, but I related completely to all that stuff. And it has served me well in lots of ways, but it can be kind of crippling, especially as an artist, I think.
You know, I just had this memory, which I've completely buried for such a long time. I don't know how old I would have been, 7 or 8. And I had a teacher that I really loved. And she said to me one day, very affectionately, you're a strange child. But the way she said it was like, I felt really special. I was a strange child. So I came home and told my mom, oh, Miss Howard says that I'm a strange child. And my mom was like, why did she say that? What did she mean by strange? I can picture it now from my mom's perspective. She's probably like, oh my God, what's happening? What's strange about my daughter? What's wrong with her? And I can remember that sense of my pride in that suddenly going, oh, it's not good to stand out. I stood out and now it's not good. And I think that is something that definitely in our generation, I don't think as much now with young women, but we definitely got more of that than our brothers did.
I'm not positive how different it is. I hope it is. I hope it is. I think the hype around it is different now, but I have, and I think I may have mentioned this a very dear young woman in my life when I was the first time I was on Art Juice talking about imposter syndrome. But she was telling me recently that she, right after college, and she's brilliant and capable and all those things, she was at some course that was purportedly helping women get into the workforce at a high level. And maybe it was in technology, I don't remember. But she remembers very specifically being told to like tamp down her expectations and to stay in her lane and to not expect too much. I mean, it was very damaging. And she ended up getting a job shortly after this that was everything she hoped for and more. But she had to sort of circumvent that advice by other women as a habit.
Yes. You know, I think this is, when I was a feminist in college, my feminism took the form of men are all horrible. Men suppress women. It's all men's fault.
Right.
Apart from the boys I was dating, but everybody else, they're all horrible. It's all their fault. And the more in looking back over my life, it's the women who guided very much of, who were much more influential. Now, I know those women were also influenced by the patriarchy, so don't write me loads of emails. Right. I understand where it comes from, but the messaging I got that restricted me or put me in a box was a lot more from women than it was from men. And it was a very much a sense of just be, like you say, don't expect too much. I don't think it was ever said in those words, but don't get above yourself. Don't, you know, don't push yourself forward. And we are very different culturally, because I'm from the north of England. You're from California. Are you from California originally?
No, I'm from actually New York. So
you're from New York. Yeah. So what was it like for you? Was it the same?
Well, I just remembered also, I'm having this memory that's something I haven't thought of in decades. But when I was in college and I made Phi Beta Kappa, which is our honors system, and my mom very proudly, because my parents did not go to, neither of them went to college, neither of them graduated high school, actually. So the fact that I was in college and excelling was a big deal. They were really proud. And my mom told her best friend, she made Phi Beta Kappa. And her friend said to her, "Be careful, Esther." Meaning, she'll have a hard time finding a husband. That was the implication.
Yeah.
And you know, to give my parents credit, they came to my Phi Beta Kappa ceremony with, I have a photo of that, actually. I have a wonderful photo of my mom and me on campus holding my little diploma that said Phi Beta Kappa. And she's absolutely beaming. I mean, they didn't go along with that. But I remember it very tremendously in the culture. And I had something happen. This was in the art world recently. Somebody that, you know, I won't mention names here, but a very, very, very successful artist. She works so hard and she sells a ton. And I remember this happened on a public Facebook page. Somebody said to her and she would celebrate her own wins in a way that I thought was wonderful. She'd say, "I'm so excited this sold, and I love this painting, and I'm glad I found a home." And somebody said to her in public, "You should stop writing about all your sales. It makes other artists feel bad." And this is another woman.
Yeah.
And I think I was among the first to say, I took out the cursing I was feeling, but absolutely not, keep going, do that, again, I have felt jealous of this person. And she works harder than I do. You know what I mean? It's sort of like she deserves, but I feel jealous, but that's very different than wanting her to tamp it down.
Yeah.
I think it's very, it's easy to feel threatened. It's easy if we get like a side detour to patriarchy, if we have less of a pie, if women have less of the pie, then I can see where women could feel like if one person takes too much, there's that. I don't think it's a helpful way to look at it, but yeah. I can understand it. I can understand that feeling. But and to this woman's credit, she did not stop. She did not stop celebrating herself.
Yeah.
Not in an obnoxious way at all. Just in a, I'm proud. She's a great model for having your own back and, just going for it.
The thought I had in the newsletter and what I felt like we could learn specifically from men was just this kind of natural confidence. And again, caveat for anybody writing to me, I know there are men who don't have confidence. I know there are women who have massive confidence, but mm-hmm. I am now speaking from my experience of working now with thousands of artists. Mm-hmm. Women are far less likely to do big things without yes. really thinking about, without really having to push themselves. They're far more likely to apologize for showing you their work. "I'm sorry to bother you."
Yeah.
But whereas men are much more likely to just go for it and believe in themselves, or if they don't believe in themselves, go for it anyway, and then see what happens.
And I have seen that in my practice, the psychology part of my life, in addition to the artist part of my life, where women will have, let's say there's a job description and it's got 10 check marks saying these are the qualities you need to have. And a woman will have 9.5 of them and she won't apply because she doesn't have all 10. And a man will have 1.5 and really not be particularly suited to it and go for it anyway. I agree that we can learn from it. I had a thing that I told you about recently where I was trying to go bigger because I started doing these post-its of women, these tiny little, 3x3 portraits where I was packing a lot of power into that because I was interested in amplifying women's voices. This is actually much more clear to me in retrospect as I'm looking, but then I made them 10 by 10. Then I did the series of my mom, and they were like, I don't know, they were larger. They weren't tiny. They weren't big, but they were bigger. And then I just sort of had this itch. I wanted to take things bigger and bigger. And I was really having a hard time, you know, taking up more space literally on the panel. And I started doing it. And it was exciting. I mean, I didn't know that the work was where it needed to be yet, but it was exciting. There was a ton of energy in it. And we had a big open studio coming up, and I decided I needed to write something about it. So I wrote something up about where I think all of this work has come from, which was from something I may have spoken to you about earlier as well. It was an incident that happened around my table growing up that we would joke with my mom. One of my brothers would say, when she was talking a lot, he would say, Esther, you want to shut up, in this kind of sing-songy voice. And it was hilarious. This was in the 60s, and all of us laughed. It was like delivered with great comedic timing. And we all just thought it was funny. And it occurred to me, like, you know, a couple of months ago, I don't think it's funny anymore, you know, that, and Esther doesn't want to shut up. And I wrote this up as a story, and it was on the wall of my studio, and it was a powerful story. And it says, no, Esther doesn't want to shut up. She wants as much, you know, as much space at the table, as much this, as much that. And it was a whole thing. And I showed it to my cousin, who's like a sister, who could tell me anything. I said, can I actually put this out to my newsletter? Can I actually put it on the wall of my studio? She said, you can, and it's great. And you said you want as much this, as much that. She said, where's the fury? She said to me. I said, I can't write that I'm angry. A woman can't write that she's angry, because then she'll be angry. Then she'll be an angry woman. And Everybody, it's an angry woman. So I can't possibly write that. And I wrote it. I did put that in there. I said, and I also put in that I want to make as much money as men. You know, I put all of that in there. And I was kind of terrified, but I sort of felt more the passion for it, and the strength of the feeling was bigger than the fear. But they were close. You know, it was close. I wasn't positive I was going to put it up there. And I had such strong reactions from people, you know, during the open studios. People came.
What kind of reactions?
It was on a manifesto. It was like this. Well, you can't see how big it is, but it was like, I don't know, 16 by like 15 by 20 or something, as where this whole thing was written out. But it had in large font in the hallway, it said, it all started with a question. And so it pulled people in from the hallway, because that was large. And people came in and they stood and they read it, and they would start by laughing because it was, Esther, you want to shut up? It sounded silly. And then people would get very quiet. And some people came in and cried. Many, many, many people asked if they could ask questions. Many women like went down the hall and pulled their friends and came in and said, you got to see this. It was very powerful. Wow. I had a painting of, I don't know if I've shown it to you, but it was of Lizzo. I don't know how many of your listeners know her, but she's this in your face, big, gorgeous Black girl singer. And I think she's brilliant. And I have a beautiful, I think, great portrait of her. And a guy came into Open Studios and said, I can't help thinking for her own health, she'd be better off losing weight. He said about painting. And the whole point of Lizzo is that she doesn't care. Like, this is me.
I was just going to say, I can't help thinking it's absolutely none of your business what she does with her own health or body or anything
else.
Exactly.
And I had a dilemma because he was a guest in my studio. So I actually was proud of what I came up with, because I wanted to say something like that to him or worse. But I said, you know, I have a feeling she'd see it differently, is what I said. And I think it went completely over his head, that, but, you know, and I wasn't going to, you know, get stuck.
You can't,
it was not the time or place, but it was interesting. It was interesting.
That's the other thing that you've just brought up, that it's not the time and place. And we don't want to, how many times in this conversation so far have I said, I know, don't email me, don't get angry.
Oh, that's right.
We're both doing that thing of we want to say these things, but we want to also placate and make sure everybody feels okay, because we don't want anyone upset. And it's not I don't think it's, I'm not frightened of people being angry. I don't like it when people don't feel good. I feel it's my job to nurture everyone, make sure everyone feels good, and don't upset the apple cart and don't annoy anyone. And we're doing it again because maybe we should say, if you feel like that, you should leave. Not saying you should have done that in that situation, but isn't it interesting that we've both gone into being polite?
Yeah, totally. It's very hard. I mean, that's why that Murray thing was so powerful. Like, raise your daughters so they don't care what, you know, what people think on some level.
And this is another point I wanted to talk to you about, because I definitely get this feeling with the self-portraits of shame, which I'm having to recognize and confront, that I can't share these with people. It's too self-centered. Meanwhile, my favorite artist, everybody knows, is Tracy Emin. Her entire body of work is about herself. I don't think she's self, I don't think that's self-centered.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. But when it's myself, that that all that conditioning comes back saying, don't put yourself in the center of things. Don't, you know, do portraits of other people. Don't do portraits of yourself.
Yeah.
And where do you, what I wanted to ask you about that is, where are you finding that show up for you, or where have you found it show up for you, this idea of not taking up too much space?
Well, I just think it's, I mean, like my latest series of these sort of more wild women is called the Exuberance Series. And the tagline is women taking up space with joy, attitude, and no apology. And I think it's aspirational for me to say that. I do. My whole life, I've been attracted to those kind of, you know, women doing that. I remember Anne Margaret in Bye Bye Birdie. Who else? Rita Moreno in the first West Side Story. You know, women sort of dancing and just sort of like reveling in themselves as women. Lizzo now, you know, that's who I'm being attracted to and wanting to draw and wanting to paint. I don't think I could do the self. I hate doing self-portraits. To me, that's my idea of life and hell. And I don't know if that's your, you know, speaking to your point of that, well, that I certainly can't do, because obviously that would be narcissistic or self-involved or something.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I mean, I sort of think of it as it just takes me into not condemning myself, but I don't want to, you know, I had issues around what I looked like, you know, and I don't want to pay that much attention. I don't know if I could.
Yeah, I don't like look. I'm having to make myself look at, we're aging. I mean, everyone's aging. And it's like, I don't look like I used to look like. I don't like some of the things that have happened. And it is confronting to look at it. And I don't necessarily think everyone should, by the way. I wasn't asking you whether you feel you should be doing self-portraits. It was more just this idea of us not doing that. I'll give you an example of what I can think of that came up with you and I a few years ago.
Okay.
I realized I wanted to teach. And I was going to apply for something where I was going to be helping someone else teach. I don't know if you remember this. And I told you, and you said, I can't remember what word you said, but it was something like, do you really want to be second fiddle in someone else's show? Or do you want to have your own show?
Yes, yes.
Some words to that effect. And I didn't put in an application. I did start my own course. Partly because of you saying that, I think. Partly because you certainly laid the groundwork, and then later I had the idea for the course, and I felt ready to go do it on my own. And now, God, I am so glad. But my thought when I wanted to teach was, okay, I'll go work for somebody who's already set up something, and I'll go work for that person instead of I'll do my own thing, because it didn't occur to me initially to go create my own empire. And I just think that's I suppose where I'm asking, do you see in yourself, or have you not had that problem? Have you always been quite confident about doing what you want?
I've definitely had that problem too. And it's for sure I have. And I think it is for me, because I care too much when people say pipe down, or I really related to the thing you talked about when you did your solo episode, you know, what's wrong with me episode, about getting passionate about something and like not shutting up about it. Cause I can't, you know, when I'm, well, I'm sure I could, I mean, I can muzzle myself, but when I'm really excited about something, I just want to go on about it. And I do draw people to me with it, but I'll sometimes see, like, if I see a face of somebody glazing over, or if I sort of witness that, it's very easy for me to like muzzle myself on it. I've had a slightly different experience. Like, I got really excited almost exactly a year ago. I did my own course. It was like a live course, like a coaching mindset for artists. It was called Imagine Coaching for Creatives. And I was very excited about it. And I thought it was going to be a little beta thing. It was live, and it was going to be, I would start it sort of like you started Find Your Joy, and it would start small and I'd build. And I was definitely nervous putting it out there, but went for it. I mean, I really went for it. I had a whole bunch of people I met with and helped me promote it. And I decided that I didn't want it. It was wonderful. I mean, I had 65 people. They were incredibly engaged. Many of them are still meeting and their friends. They've got a ton out of it. And I was really surprised that I didn't want to do it anymore.
Right.
I didn't
Interesting.
Expand on it. Like, I was positive that was going to happen. It was going to be the beginning of something bigger. And I had one of the things I was teaching people was pay really close attention to what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. Really, really close. And I taught them all these ways to do that. And I was paying really, really close attention. And I realized after it was over that it was fabulous. I loved the group. I loved what they got out of it. And no, you know, yeah. And that wasn't because I needed to small myself down. That was because I was actually paying attention and saying, this next chapter, I really want to delve into my art more. You know, I really am ready for that chapter after decades of tending to other people. I'm just ready, as much as I loved it, still do, but I'm just ready for something different. So, you know, I don't know if that's really answered, but I've definitely felt the.
So this time then of taking up space, it's going to be taking up space with your work. Then it's going to be, it's good. Yeah. And what am I trying to say? What challenges do you have with that? What do you feel you would like to do, but you're going to have to push yourself towards it? Or isn't there anything yet? Are you not far enough into it to know?
There are a few things. I mean, I do want to, once I do, it's not my nature to do nothing. I'll do some, you know, my husband and I will do some traveling, and I like doing stuff, but I do feel like I need some kickback time to see what rises up. Mm-hmm. I do want to do some kind of course, like a standalone course, you know, in the mindset that I'm going to do. I've been studying more about imposter syndrome and shame, actually, for my last continuing education credits that I need as a psychologist, for my, you know, one last licensing that I need. So I've been studying that, and I want to share that, but in a totally different format. I want to do an online course. There's a course I teach in person, a mixed media class. I want to do that. And I'm scared about that because I haven't done those before, but I'll learn it. That's fine. Artistically, I still feel like I have a lot to learn about the figure, and I've never, I started an online figure drawing class that I stopped, and I'm determined not to beat myself up about that. And I don't want to do, I feel like I need to know more before I can break it up and do it differently. I don't want to do realistic figure drawing, but I feel like I need to know more before I can make it my own. And I want it to be very big, and I'm scared about the usual suspects, you know, wasting paint, having these huge things. What am I going to do with them when they don't sell? Blah, you know, blah, 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 baloney, all that stuff that comes up. So I'm definitely afraid of that. I've also started becoming very obsessed with Bobbi Burgers. Do you know her work?
No.
She does these huge immersive abstract florals. And I have this background in Ikebana flower arranging.
Tell me how you spell it.
B-O-B-B-I-E.
Yeah.
B-U-R-G-E-R-S. And I'll send you a link. She has a process video that I've watched it like 15. I feel like a groupie. I've watched it 15 times.
I'll put a link in the show notes, everybody. Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you'll be able to find a link in the show notes.
Yeah, that process video. I mean, she uses so much paint. Oh my God. I mean, she does these thin washes and then these like big, generous swaths of big paint, and you can sort of lose yourself in them. And I'm interested in not copying her, you know, not compare and despair like you teach to your people, but, you know, compare and be inspired and figure out a way to make that mine. Because I love what I love about flower arranging is sort of, and Bobby Burgers talks about this too, the passage of time in a painting, you know, past, present and future in an arrangement, like dying buds and fully present ones in the moment, but they're not front and center. And then ones that are fading out and huge. So I would love to do that. I don't feel it already. I've started and they suck so far, but you know, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to take that back. They don't suck so far. Mm-hmm. They're fledgling efforts.
Yeah.
And I have to do many more of them. I quote you all the time. I mean, you say, show me your failed paintings that you always say to your students. And I don't have enough in either of these areas yet. But I'm determined to get there. So those and doing the online classes, and I'm starting to put together PDFs on that. So we'll see. I'm not sure what else, you know, and I'm always ready to be swept somewhere else. I just started a little mini series called, I'm sure you know it, the Beatles, Two of Us, the Beatles song.
One of my favorites.
Yes, it's one of my favorites as well. And I have learned to pay attention when a song pops into my head while I'm working. I just pay attention, and that song kept popping into my head. And I looked up the lyrics and that line, Two of Us Sunday driving, not arriving.
Not arriving.
And I'm doing this little series of sort of more what you knew me as in the beginning, some of these sort of abstract Japanese things. It was just, I was sort of avoiding the work I'm struggling with, but it was also coming home in the most delicious sort of very meandery way. So I have a few things in that series, and I think it's going to be the Sunday driving series, because it's about losing yourself in that work. So again, multi-passionate. I'm not all over the place. I'm multi-passionate in terms of what
I was looking up a concept before we spoke. Let me just find the name of it. Overchoice, a cognitive impairment in which people have a difficult time making a decision when faced with many options.
Right.
And I was wondering about this with you. It's certainly something I've been experiencing recently, and it's too much choice. And I even find that with my work when I'm branching out now into portraits and realism and then abstracts, and now I'm here in Cornwall and it's very inspiring, so I could go in that direction and start making some Cornish paintings. And so how is it feeling for you at the moment, where in 3 months all the choice is about to open up for you?
I get nervous because I do feel like I don't want to limit. I mean, I don't have that much time left because I'm getting older, and I don't want to limit myself on the one hand, but to excel at anything, you need to delve into it more. So I worry about it. I try not to worry too much because it just seems to be my nature to do that. And I think if I had to do one thing only, I wouldn't really shoot myself, but I'd be bored to tears if I had to only do one thing. And when something grabs me, it's very hard not to go with it. It's very hard not to veer off. So I don't know. And in terms of too much choice, I think the lingo is satisficers, people who are satisfied with one choice but with like a few choices. They tend to be happier than those of us who, and they're less frozen. And my uncle who just passed away, one of the stories my husband's going to tell about him is that he remembers going to they were at a restaurant, And he asked, like, what's on the dessert menu? He said, the guy said, a pistachio ice cream. And that was the first thing he was saying. And Justin said, great, I'll take that. And he didn't even want to hear the rest of it, you know, and he was one of the happiest people I ever knew.
When you said time's running out, I get into trouble with people for that, because there are people who listen to this podcast who are in their 80s and say, you don't even know from time. But the truth is, certain people are very conscious of that, because we've got this drive for more and more. We are conscious mm-hmm. of, okay, so I've got to make the most of the time I've got left. Yeah, I am not a satisficer. I am like, yeah. Tell me all the choices on the menu and then tell me if there's anything extra in the back, and then I won't be able to decide. It's the same thing with, well, like, as you say, there's only a limited amount of time. So I could go down the portraits route and I could really try and get good at that. Or I could really get good at abstracts, but I can't really get good at both because there's limited amount of time. And so do I need to choose? Or are we just going to be people who maybe are, you know, again, did Picasso say this? Did he go, no, oh, I can't be really good, yeah, so I'm not going to do it? No, he didn't. He just did not.
And Diebenkorn as well. And Diebenkorn's one of my heroes because he just went anywhere he felt like going. You know, he just went all these different places. And the drawings are incredible and the figurative is amazing. And then the abstract also. He just sort of...
And what's interesting is I see both those people as what I would say real artists. I say they're real artists because they did all that, because they couldn't help being creative in all these different ways and just had to pursue it all. And yet when it's me, I say, well, you can't be a real artist unless you narrow down and focus in. So isn't that interesting that... It's something to do with a results drive too. I don't know about with you, but it's something to do with a drive for, like, I'll start doing a self-portrait and immediately go to, right, well, I'm going to be the best. I'll have to be the best self-portrait there ever was. And I'll have to have, you know, this massive exhibition of my work where people flock and the Guardian reviews it and says how amazing it is. All of that goes into my head, and then I have to push it all back out again and say, no, let's come back down to earth and let's just learn how to mix some colors and let's just learn how to get a lightness first.
But I think it's fun though. I mean, because whenever, like, before every open studio, I go through the I'm going to sell out fantasy. I mean, it's I have that, and at this point I observe it, and I actually am not disappointed when it doesn't happen. I mean, I won't say I'm not disappointed at all, but I enjoy it's fun. I like the dreaming big part of it. You know, I think it's, again, I think it's useful for women to do that, you know, to allow yourself, not instead of who am I to do that? Like, why the hell not?
It's so important. I mean, what brought that newsletter on for me? And this, for anyone listening who doesn't get my newsletter, is a newsletter which was said, what can we learn from men? And it was about self-confidence. But it was brought on by watching a documentary that's on BBC in the UK at the moment in several parts called The Sensationalists. And it's about the young British artist movement in the late 80s, early 90s. And Damien Hirst as the leader of that movement. And... so interesting how I don't think it's by no means just because he's a man. It's a very particular personality, confidence, entrepreneurialism, you know, far above his peers who were all men also. So that is, it's not because he's a man, but watching this documentary and how he just looked at the art world, which was very stuffy, the high-end art world, and thought, well, they're not going to let me in. So I'm going to have to do my own thing.
Right.
And didn't just say, well, we could rent an empty shop for a few weeks and put a few paintings in it. He went, right, we're having this massive warehouse and we're going to make it into an event that the world's top art collectors are going to want to come and see this. And he was so young when you look back on it, he was so young in the footage. How on earth do you go, from where he was student in just one of many art colleges to that. But because of that, he lifted all these other people along with him, because the however many people that were in the show with him all came along, you know, all had their work bought and noticed. And that is the confidence that I would love for us all to have, because that didn't just lift up a bunch of artists and it didn't just make him rich. It actually it changed contemporary art, and at least in Britain, it made contemporary artists into celebrities. It completely revolutionized everything because of one person's confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad had a story about his dad, because my dad came to America when he was 20, and his dad came before him. My dad was a cantor. He had a beautiful voice, and he sang in synagogues, and his dad came before him and sort of like was his press agent. Like they were these poor people who had nothing, but he would go to these synagogues and say, "You have to hire my son. He's the best cantor who ever lived." He's like hyperbolic about my dad. And my dad said, "What are you saying? How am I possibly going to live up to that?" And what my dad said to me when he was sort of talking about his life, he said, "But he believed in me so much, I sort of had no choice. I had to go along with it."
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. My uncle passed away a few years ago, but my mum tells this story. My family his side of the family was quite working class. My dad's side of the family was quite working class. No one had gone to college or done any of that in their family. But my uncle David was the head of facilities at a big university, and everyone always said, and he has his name on the door, like he had an office with his name on the door. That's the kind of level that he got to. But the way he got that job was he went and applied for a job as an electrician. He wasn't an electrician. Those were the days when you could do that kind of thing. Okay. He got away with it. He got hired. He figured out electronics as he went. He didn't luckily blow anyone up or kill anyone. And then by the end of his career, he retired as the head of, the university's facilities, whatever. That kind of confidence, again, just believe it, then get it done. Now, of course, that could lead you astray if you're not bright. He obviously trusted himself, knew he could figure it out. But if that is what you were saying right at the beginning, that sometimes the male candidates will apply for something they're not qualified for and then crash and burn in the job because they really shouldn't have ever had that job. But there is an enormous amount of the time that it simply is if we just believe in ourselves. And like with your dad and the singing, if you're told he's the best, well, you just kind of accept, okay, he's great then, he's the best. Unless he's terrible, people aren't going to say, well, that was a lot.
Exactly.
They're going to go home and say, we just heard the best cantor in wherever. He was fantastic.
Yes. And he also was like, sort of joyful in that. He just sort of like, okay, then I'm going to go for it. And it was, he was a wonderful model in that way. I'm glad that I had him to witness. He would do stuff. It was cool.
So I think what we have to learn from this, we're saying, is if we feel like we've got limited time, and we've all got limited time.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
So if we feel like we've got limited time, let's just be as confident as we can be so that we can make the most of our opportunities, whether that is just painting what we want to paint, or whether that is going and renting a gallery space and putting on a show if that's what we want to do, or whether it's launching an online course if that's what we want to do, or whether it's teaching a watercolor workshop at the WI if that's what we want to do. But whatever it is that we are telling ourselves, oh, that's a big leap, let's see what happens if we just act as if we're perfectly capable of doing it.
And what's the worst that can happen? I mean, I did something last weekend where I did a live Instagram live doing an Ikebana arrangement, and it was a little bit of a hot mess. I mean, it was sort of a mess, but it was fun, and I tried it. I tried it. Next time I do it, I'll work some of those kinks. I think it's life is short. And what I really don't want to do is, and I don't want to die with regrets about things I didn't try. And yeah. My advice would be to not wait, to not be afraid, because that's not going away. Like you said, you have to accept the fact that you're going to be afraid and try to step up anyway, because it's, and try to laugh. I mean, I was laughing at myself during my botched Ikebana demonstration, because it was a little bit hilarious, but it was fun. You know,
that is the nightmare, isn't it? That you'll do a demo and it won't work. And then what's the worst that happened? I bet you didn't. Nobody unfollowed. Nobody objected. Nobody sent you mean emails.
If they unfollowed, I wasn't paying attention. I don't know. And yeah. And my feeling is, you try something you haven't done before and see how it goes. Because yeah. I'll just do. I can't believe she tried that. I'll say, good for her. She tried. She'll learn. You know, that's what I think is, that's the path I'm going to try to take in my time left, is to go for it.
I think the more, when we see other people messing things up, my reaction is always, oh, phew, they mess things up too. It's, right. It's never, ha, 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 look at that. The only people who say, ha, 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 you messed it up, are the ones who are horribly insecure and unhappy anyway yeah. in their own life. Yeah. Everyone else is a little bit relieved. And that's why all the Brené Brown stuff about vulnerability is yeah. so, it's changed so much, I think, for many people, because
yeah,
you realize so. That the more you show vulnerability, the more everyone likes you more. So it's not yeah. even, it's not scary, because people like you anyway. If you're more honest, if you're less honest and you try and make yourself look good, It's not successful anyway. It doesn't get the desired result.
I have to say, honestly, I wish it had gone a little bit better last Saturday. Yeah. But I really am okay. I really am. It's sort of more like, and I'll do, I will learn lessons. If I do it again, if I do another live, I won't do live, I'll pre-record it, whatever. You know, I would of course prefer that some of the hot mess didn't happen, but it was really okay. It really was okay.
This is the thing that you learn the older you get, and that young kids, I see with the young kids that I'm around, that they really don't get when they're young, is no one really cares. No one right, cares exactly. that much. They're yeah. busy. They've got their own problems. They give it 3 seconds thought and move on. But you're painfully self-conscious as a young person, and you slowly shed that as you yeah. get older, I think, which is one of the benefits of getting older. We might have creaky knees and all sorts yeah. of other problems, but we do get more willing to just take a chance, because what's the worst that could happen?
Exactly.
So that's our message to you, if you're yeah, listening. Yeah. Our message is, what's the worst that could happen? Take up space, give it a go. Mm-hmm. Female or male, confident yes. or not.
Right. Don't wait to feel perfectly confident to do it. Just don't wait.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel. It's been an absolute joy talking to you. I think our conversation went round and round a little bit, but actually came to somewhere really interesting. And I'm really glad we had the chat, because it's given me a lot to think about.
I hope so. And the same for me. And I will be brave and ask people to reach out to me if they want to hear what I'm up to next.
Yes, so where can people find you?
They can find me at racheldavisstudio.com. You'll probably put that link in, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm putting together a PDF about the course that I will be teaching, you know, the sort of the standalone mindset one. I'm not there yet, but I'm getting close. And I'm excited about that. So,
yeah. So if you want to work with somebody who's got all these years of experience in working with creatives on mindset stuff, and you want to be in on the ground floor of this course with Rachel, go over to our website. And what's your Instagram as well?
Is racheldavisart.bayarea. So I'll
put both those links in the show yeah. notes. So wherever you listen to this, you can find the links below. Take care, Rachel.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Riley, shh. He's just laying on the sofa. He doesn't actually bother to get off the sofa to protect me from the marauders. He just makes a noise from the sofa. Shh, quiet, Riley, quiet, good boy. Okay, I think we can continue.